AAI Acquisitions suspends development of the A700 as Russian stock markets tumble. Forecast International predicts Eclipse will be next. And IAM members will vote Saturday on a new contract with Boeing. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, October 29th, 2008. Starting after business hours Monday, we were getting tips from ANN news spies that AAI Acquisitions, which acquired the assets of bankrupt Adam Aircraft, was facing a crisis of its own. Word was the company, which is based at Centennial Airport in Englewood, Colorado, had shut its doors and laid off workers. Following a substantial decline in the Russian stock markets, AAI is funded by private Russian equity firms. We tried to contact AAI, but calls went unanswered. We finally reached Robert Olislagers, executive director for the Arapahoe County Public Airport Authority at Centennial Airport, who agreed to walk over there and knock on the door at AAI. Olislagers reported back that his tenant has suspended all flight testing and further development on the A700 twin jet. Quote, "It appears investment capital has been pared down due to last week's fall of the Russian stock market," unquote. He added the company assured him it's not closing its doors, but appeared to have furloughed all but a few senior engineers. When an official statement finally appeared yesterday on the company's website, the move was termed a strategic realignment in response to worldwide economic conditions. CEO Jack Brawley is quoted as saying there will be an announcement of a revised schedule for the A700's development and certification after an evaluation of economic and market conditions. A prominent industry forecast firm is predicting that another VLJ manufacturer, relying on Russian investment, won't survive. In a new report to be issued in December, Forecast International projects production of the Eclipse 500 will end after a token production run in the first quarter of 2009. FI aircraft analyst Douglas Royce says Eclipse's success hinged on volume production, which it has never achieved. He adds that a shrinking market and the collapse of Dayjet, the manufacturer's largest customer, won't help. Eclipse has said it needs another $200 to $300 million to continue. Royce notes, quote, "Under the circumstances, Forecast International believes that securing new funding, while still possible, is unlikely. We have forecast production of 162 Eclipse 500s during 2008. We believe that the company will be able to push production out into early 2009, but will be forced to cease production within the first quarter," unquote. FI officially predicts just 12 planes will be built in the first quarter next year, but Royce adds, quote, "even this forecast may prove too optimistic," unquote. Eclipse has been very tight-lipped about its situation since its own strategic realignment over the summer, but ANN has requested a response to the FI forecast, and we'll keep you posted. The union representing over 20,000 engineers and technical workers at Boeing agreed to postpone by one day yesterday's scheduled start of contract talks. The Society of Professional Engineering Employees in Aerospace agreed to a request for the delay after Boeing reached a tentative agreement with the International Association of Machinists that it hopes will end a strike that began September 6th. The upcoming talks with Boeing involve two contracts. One covers 13,390 engineers. A second includes 6,889 technical workers. A majority of those workers are in the Puget Sound area, but others work in Oregon, Utah, and California. Both contracts expire December 1st. The talks were scheduled to start at 9 a.m. Pacific time today at the DoubleTree Hotel in SeaTac, Washington. That's a town named for its location surrounding the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. Reuters is now reporting that the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, which reached its tentative agreement with Boeing Monday, has scheduled a ratification vote for its 27,000 members at Boeing for this Saturday. The union has recommended members vote yes. No details of the settlement have been released yet. The federal mediated talks which produced the agreement were conducted under a news blackout. Up next on ANN, Patty Wagstaff faces a new charge in Wisconsin. GE and NASA prepare the open rotor jet engine for a comeback. And airlines face the unexpected bite of fuel hedges. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for October 29th. I'm Paul Plagg. Airshow performer Patty Wagstaff faces a new charge in connection with her DUI arrest at EAA AirVenture. The Oshkosh Northwestern reports the case was scheduled in Winnebago County Circuit Court yesterday in connection to an incident July 31st, which happened as Wagstaff attempted to return to her hotel from the Gathering of Eagles dinner. She was arrested on Whitman Regional Airport and charged with the first offense of operating under the influence and refusing a blood alcohol test. The Northwestern reports a new misdemeanor charge of resisting an officer has been filed and carries a maximum penalty of 9 months in jail and a $10,000 fine. Wagstaff, who's 57 years old, was not required to appear in person before the court yesterday. GE Aviation and NASA say they'll team up for a wind tunnel program to evaluate counter-rotating fan blade systems for open rotor jet engines that could sharply reduce fuel consumption. In the 1980s, GE successfully ground-tested and flew an open rotor jet engine that demonstrated fuel savings of more than 30% compared to similar-sized jet engines with conventional ducted front fan systems. The engine, which was named the GE-36, was acknowledged as a breakthrough, but was never developed after fuel prices fell sharply in the late 80s and early 90s. Well, now it's back on the front burner. The testing will take place at NASA's Glenn Research Center next year, using some of the same test equipment GE used 20 years ago. GE Aviation hopes the technology will compete effectively with Pratt & Whitney's geared turbofan, which also promises fuel savings in the 30% range. But unlike the geared turbofan, the open rotor jet presents noise challenges, which will require further refinement. Attempts to use hedges to control fuel costs have put airline executives in the odd situation of having to explain to stockholders why a stunning decline in oil prices has produced millions in losses. Reuters reports that some airlines have hedges that will result in paying above-market prices for their fuel. For years, Southwest Airlines has been admired for using fuel hedges to create a major cost advantage over rivals. But in the latest quarter, the airline wrote down $247 million in accounting losses when dropping fuel prices made the hedges less valuable. Industry-wide, losses due to hedges totaled over $2 billion. Still, industry observers say you'd really have to be a glass-half-empty type to cry over hedging losses. The money which will be saved by the airlines through lower fuel costs is expected to dwarf those accounting losses. Consultant Robert Mann notes, quote, "If you had the choice, you'd take the non-cash charge. Obviously, the lower fuel prices are a big plus," unquote. Despite a rare losing quarter blamed on hedges, Southwest CEO Gary Kelly says hedges will continue to play a role at his company. Quote, "Right now, prices have no bottom. We can't be oblivious to that. At some point, we'll want to adjust our strategy and continue to be adequately hedged into the future," unquote. Bombardier Aerospace announced a milestone in civil aviation yesterday, the test flight of an aircraft equipped with an all-electric braking system. The testing lasted over 7 hours and included 5 landings and a series of high-speed braked ground runs. Test pilot Gary Bruce commented afterward on the performance of the Meggitt e-brake electric braking system. Quote, "We tested the e-brake system's normal emergency and park braking functionality during both ground and flight tests. It provided improved braking control in normal and emergency operating modes, resulting in tight centerline control even during maximum brake applications," unquote. Bombardier's technology demonstrator was modified by removing its hydraulically actuated brake-by-wire control system. In its place, a complete electric brake-by-wire system with fully integrated anti-skid protection, emergency, and parking brake functions was installed. The company says it expects electric braking to include benefits such as increased dispatch reliability, elimination of brake system hydraulic leaks with associated fire risk, simplification of the aircraft's manufacturing process, reduced maintenance costs for airlines, and a reduction of toxic hydraulic fluids in the environment. Still ahead, Maine residents prepare to honor a painful memory. Zeppelin flight seeing returns to California. And why is that stewardess wearing a lead-lined vest? You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, October 29th. I'm Paul Platt. As is the case with so many dark moments of the World War II era, memories of the deadliest air crash in the history of the state of Maine have been buried for decades. The Portland Press-Herald reports that today, an apartment complex with manicured lawns and swing benches has replaced the Red Bank Trailer Park in the Long Creek area of South Portland, where a twin-engine light attack bomber crashed on July 11, 1944. The pilot, Army Air Corps Lieutenant Philip Fee Russell, died, as did 18 residents on the ground, most of them young mothers and small children. A total of 18 trailer homes were destroyed, leaving many others injured or homeless. Today, after six decades of healing, as is also the case with so many dark moments of the World War II era, residents of the area now feel moved to create a memorial. Some want to place a marker on a trail to be created on city land at the edges of what is now called the Old English Village Apartment Complex. Some residents who were young children at the time of the catastrophe still live nearby and have vivid memories of the A-26 Invader aircraft circling low overhead in a fog while Russell tried to find the airport. Others remember the horrific scene which followed. The exact form of the marker, the costs, and how they'll be covered are still loose ends. John Kierstead, who is leading the effort, hopes the memorial can be in place for next year's 65th anniversary of the tragedy. Quote, "I want this to be something when people go by, they see it and know it means something," unquote. The airship Ventures Zeppelin has finally arrived at its new home at Moffett Federal Airfield in Mountain View, California. The Zeppelin NT-07, which stands for New Technology, was manufactured in Germany by Zeppelin Luftschifftechnik and crossed the Atlantic from Hamburg, Germany to Beaumont, Texas on a 530-foot container ship called the Combi Dock 1. It then made a week-long flight to the San Francisco Bay Area, culminating with a pass over the Golden Gate Bridge. Airship Ventures President Brian Hall was on board for the ferry flight and appreciated the experience. Quote, "It's a way to see the world in a way you haven't experienced it before. In a Zeppelin, you're flying low and slow. You're going at a leisurely pace. You're seeing things you wouldn't see from the road," unquote. Airship Ventures will offer the only passenger airship flight service in America in over 70 years. Flight seeing tours will be offered from several Bay Area locations, showcasing the San Francisco Bay, Silicon Valley, Sonoma and the Napa Valley wine country, and Monterey and the Big Sur coastline. Up to 12 passengers at a time will depart Moffett, Oakland International, and Sonoma County Airport, with tickets priced starting at $495 per person. They'll enjoy a spacious cabin, oversized panoramic windows, even an onboard restroom with a window, and a unique 180-degree rear observation window and love seat that wraps around the entire aft end of the cabin. CNN reports Airship Ventures plans to have two more airships built. They're likely to be based in New York and Florida by 2010. Australian manufacturer XCOM Avionics has announced a joint manufacturing agreement with Narco Avionics, under which Narco will manufacture and support the XCOM 2.25-inch comm transceiver. Under the agreement, all manufacturing and support operations will be conducted from Narco's manufacturing plant in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania, by regular Narco Avionics employees, and will be supported by XCOM engineering and technical support personnel. The company says the move acknowledges that 90% of its sales are in the U.S. Quote, production issues in Australia have forced us to look for another manufacturer. We tried several manufacturers in Australia, but none of these could offer reliable and quality production, which basically meant we had a fantastic product that was being let down by poor manufacturing, which was out of our control. The best way around this is to find a manufacturer who is already familiar with avionics and has the ability to manufacture correctly to TSO standards, will stand behind their work, and most importantly, take pride in what they're doing. For this reason, we have entered into a cooperation with Narco Avionics, who are the world's longest-standing avionics business, unquote. The company adds that U.S. customers will see quicker delivery and, if it's ever necessary, faster repair turnaround. And finally, with all the hype surrounding carbon footprints and fuel prices, a British professor thinks he has just the answer. Ian Pohl, professor of aerospace engineering at Cranfield University and head of technology for the government-funded Omega Project, is calling for research to allow airliners to transition to nuclear power. The Times Online quotes Pohl as saying experiments conducted during the Cold War proved it could be practical. Besides the environmental benefits, the extended range of nuclear airliners would make possible nonstop flights from London to Australia or to New Zealand. The U.S. and Soviet Union were both working on nuclear-powered bombers a half century ago, seeking the same benefits nuclear power gives submarines, namely, extremely long loiter times near targets without the need to refuel. Both superpowers later abandoned their programs as intercontinental ballistic missile technology emerged. So I have a question. Would airlines add surcharges for seats farther from the reactor? Would this create a race of super NIMBYs who'd fight to keep nuke liners from flying over their homes? Well, Professor Pohl thinks the PR issues could be solved with patience. Quote, the idea was proved 50 years ago, but I accept it would take about 30 years to persuade the public of the need to fly on them. If we want to continue to enjoy the benefits of air travel without hindrance from environmental concerns, we need to explore nuclear power. If aviation remains wedded to fossil fuels, it will run into serious trouble, unquote. Which leads one to wonder, given the imminent extinction of leaded aviation fuels, could general aviation one day be in line for nuclear power? If that ever happens, we're going to need more diligent FBO line boys, that's for sure. It's bad enough when they put Jet A in a piston plane marked turbo on the cowl. Imagine if they screwed up and put plutonium fuel rods in your LSA instead of cesium pucks. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Robert Buckman, an aviation futurist who predicts the recent move by most airlines to unbundle services into a list of a la carte fees will eventually be seen as a consumer advantage. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCast. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.